Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams. And this is the New Owners in Utah sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
I think you're jumping ahead, Mr. Novy Williams, the prospective, the possible, the reported, and we doing the reporting, of course, the maybe, the could be, the getting close, the near to. How else? Give me some other. How else would I say that?
I think possible in negotiation, punch list, wherever we want to be on
all
that.
All right. Yeah. So why don't we tell everybody what we're talking about? Major League Soccer, Real Salt Lake, and one David Blitzer, co-owner of the Philadelphia 76ers, New Jersey Devils, investor in Crystal Palace, some other soccer teams, the Blitzer in Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment, going out on his own. No Josh Harris, as far as we know on this one, but looks like Mr. Blitzer is nearing a deal, at least a group that includes David Blitzer, is nearing a deal to acquire Real Salt Lake. This has been going on for a while. MLS is handling the negotiations. Why don't you fill in some detail as to how we got to this point?
Yeah, we got to this point that the former owner of Real Salt Lake, Deloy Hansen, there were some allegations of racist behavior in the workplace about a year ago. MLS investigated it. As a result of kind of the result of that investigation, Deloy Hansen agreed that he would sell the team. That was back in August or September of last year, I believe. And that, you know, he spent a couple months looking for a buyer. It wasn't working out all that well. Eventually, MLS took over the sale of the team, as we've seen actually in a number of other sports in specific situations over the years. And now MLS has been in charge of this process since January. We're 11 months in. Scott, you and I have done a bit of reporting about who was interested. There was a lot of site visits for prospective buyers coming in and visiting the location in Salt Lake City, people from overseas, people from, as we talk about David Blitzer, ownership groups from other sports teams. And it does appear right now that they are fairly close to a deal, a group led by or including David Blitzer, depending on who you talk to. But on its face, Scott, I think David is exactly the kind of owner that MLS wants to be courting, in the same way that we've talked about Wes Edens as a potential owner of an expansion team in Las Vegas. Major League Soccer wants to have a diverse ownership group that includes people that have expertise in other leagues. And David Blitzer has a co-owner of an NBA team and an NHL team, in addition to European soccer assets all across the continent. Seems like exactly the kind of person MLS would want.
Yeah, and you and I have been writing for a while on sort of these stake sales and investments that have been going on in MLS. And as is always the case, Mr. Novy Williams, it comes down to price, right? My guess would be, our reporting shows us that, you know, MLS would like this transaction to be completed with the number 4 in front of the price tag on MLS. And as you know very well, there are many ways in which these deals can be structured for clawbacks, conditions, if certain criteria is met or not. But I had heard during the process, I had heard that there were a number of owners that were pushing for MLS to actually buy the team because that 4 number may not have been realistic or possible. I'm hearing that is the possibility with certain conditions. So I'm guessing, and this is guesswork, you tell me whether you agree or not, that MLS does not want to be in the business of owning and operating a team for the long term. And long term could be 6 months, a year, where you're having to do these things. Like the NBA for a while owned a team and had to operate it. Well, you know, the Hornets, while they were looking for a sale, and some conflicts came up, and David Stern had to nix a trade, and it just gets annoying and ugly sometimes. So my guess would be that, given druthers, that the soccer don, Don Garber, the commissioner, would rather not be the owner of this team, especially, as you said, when you can bring in an owner like David Blitzer, aka Blitz in the industry, where he has all of the strategics, where he has the experience, where he can bring in sort of the know-how and the how-to from his other operations and plug it right in to the Real Salt Lake franchise.
I think you're right about that, Scott. The reason why Major League Soccer, the argument for not selling this right now, maybe taking ownership of it and selling it in a year, is that there's a pretty big or kind of seminal for the league media rights deal that is about to be signed at some point in the next year or so. And if the league believes that the market is not pricing in the value of whatever that next media deal is to the extent that it believes the deal is going to be, it can very easily, the league could hold on to this team, wait until it signs a new rights deal with Pickett, ESPN / Fox / Univision, whoever it is. If that's a 2x increase, if it's a 5x increase, whatever it is, they could then hit the market with Real Salt Lake, with the prospective buyers knowing exactly what that media deal is going to be. That seems to be the only argument for it. But you're right, Scott, the league doesn't want to own this team. And $400 million seems to be kind of a magic number in some degrees. The two other MLS teams that have sold controlling stakes this year were both right around that number. When the Wolf family, the owner of the Vikings, when they bought in Orlando City, I believe that was $400 to $450. When Ted Siegel, the real estate developer, bought in Houston, the Dynamo, that was about $400 as well. It is pretty clear that is a kind of a number for MLS teams in this tier that is important to Major League Soccer. I believe at least on the Wolf deal, there were some of those clawbacks you're talking about. So some performance metrics that may actually shift some money back to old owners, depending on how the asset performs. But yes, we Kurt Badenhausen, who does our valuations, he put Real Salt Lake at around 420 when he did MLS numbers about 6 or 7 months ago, I believe, sometime during the summer. So I think, yeah, you're right. If this deal does get done, I would think the sticker price would be somewhere right in that 400 to 425 range.
And there is precedent to what you were talking about in terms of what's the media going to look like and on big scale. Remember when Guggenheim and the Dodger sale was going on? It was all about, what is that regional sports network deal going to be look like? What's the rights payment? How much? And once the owners or the prospective owners of the Dodgers, and that be Mark Walter at the time and Todd Boehly, once they felt comfortable and had a nice ballpark, you know, Todd has denied to me he knew the exact figure, but either way, once they felt comfortable with the ballpark of what that media contract would look like, distribution or not, they knew what their bid for the team could be. And as we all know, that went for, you know, $2+ billion, including some real estate there. So yeah, I think you're right on it. And a lot of it will depend on the rights fee that they get here. And I mean, that also like moves to our next subject, like the EPL broadcast deal. But we're talking, you know, soccer over the next 5, 10, 15 years. I know the EPL and MLS are not the same. But if we're looking at from an MLS standpoint, you said 2x, even 4, 6, 10x, whatever it might be, the number is still not what it would be. And this is okay. This is not like a direct comparison, like MLS has to be the NFL or NBA. That's not the point. The point is, what is the direction? What is the future? What's the value of the content that MLS can give to these media companies? That way, these owners will know a significant portion of the revenue and what they can bid on these teams. So if you're looking to the EPL as a guide, we're looking at a $2+ billion number right now. And as we have always said in negotiation 101, Evan Novi Williams, if you want to say more bidders means what?
More money.
So there, that's what we have here. NBC, the incumbent in. Disney, CBS, looks like combined bid in. More bidders, more money. And you're seeing the value of EPL soccer. Let's see what it means for MLS. But as for the EPL, kind of flat on the domestic TV number when they redid it, but clearly valuable programming here in the U.S.
it's a perfect example of why all these European leagues and European teams, they're considering themselves relatively saturated in their home markets. They may get some increase in media when the new rights comes up. EPL did not see a huge one, but they clearly see overseas markets, and the United States and China are two of the biggest, as the way in which they really keep growing the revenue pie. The EPL is the second most watched soccer league in the US behind Liga MX. I believe it is the most watched soccer league in English language. And as a result, it's going to be extremely expensive. The La Liga right now has the most expensive overseas European deal in the US. That's about $175 million per year. EPL is going to top that for sure, because it is a more popular and more valuable property, at least here in the US. But again, you get a sense of the way that these European leagues think about their long-term revenue expansion. And it's not domestic. It is in new places like the US or like China, where they can get massive, massive rights increases.
I have said it a million times. If you look at the stadiums themselves, you have X number of seats times X number of dollars, you know, that you can charge for that seat. That is a finite number. The money is in the scale, and the technology today certainly assists in the scale. What we're seeing in new technologies is, how do we do it? How do we capture not only existing audiences, you know, second screen, how do we capture new, how do we capture younger, how do we monetize those eyeballs? You know, John Skipper said it many, many times to me, just get me the eyeballs. It is my job to figure out how to monetize it. And that's where we are. If you have the number one sort of sports marketing market in the US, if you're the EPL, of course you want to be here. You want to be in front of these eyeballs. Those players, many of them, are becoming international global superstars. They are big time global stars. Companies are going to figure out how to way to do it. You've got sports betting, you've got social, all of these new revenue streams. They just got to figure out how to do it. But to make that happen, if you're NBC, you got to pony up, right? These are very interesting calculations now, at a time when they're shuttering NBCSN. Do you put it on the mothership NBC? And what do the leagues want to know? If I'm the EPL and I'm an EPL owner right now, and I am listening to these pitches, what do you want to know? How are you going to treat us? It matters. Gary Bettman said it when he was on ESPN, right? Like, if we did half as many, if they promote us half as much as they did ignoring us, we'll be 10 times better, whatever it may be. There is great value on these platforms. These owners and these leagues want to know, what are you going to do for me? Money is, I'm guessing, would you agree that the money is going to be fairly close on this? Like, it's not going to be a decision based solely on that decimal point. It matters a whole lot.
Bids-wise,
yeah. Bids from a combined CBS, ESPN, and NBC, they're going to be fairly close. It's almost like when you're interviewing a prospective limited partner now in a franchise. If I'm selling a piece of a franchise, 5%, 10%, whatever it may be, and I've got five folks coming to me and saying, I want it, they're all going to have the money. And they're all going to be fairly close. I mean, if somebody blows you out of the water, of course, you can certainly go that way. But from a prospective LP standpoint now, I need to know, what is the synergistic abilities here? What else do you bring to the table? Do you bring a finance expertise? Do you bring a real estate expertise? Do you bring a media expertise? It's not enough to come with the money. And that's what you're going to see here. I'm very interested in the headline's going to be the $2 billion, $2 plus billion. Great. Okay, that's great. They got a nice increase, like double the amount. Perfect. Now I want to know, what else did these companies promise the EPL and these teams? How do they utilize their vast universes and their ancillary businesses to help push the league, its teams, and the stars? Because that's what's going to create the difference moving forward.
The people who do these deals will tell you that the advantage always goes to the incumbent, because yes, there's a familiarity there. From what I understand, the EPL is fairly happy with the stuff that NBC has done to promote it over the past few years. So I think that there's probably something kind of baked into it for that. But you're right, Scott. This is all about not just the money, because we often see, especially in European and overseas soccer deals, we often see that the highest bidder isn't the one that ends up getting it. For some of these leagues, getting distribution distribution, getting availability to watch is almost more important than just the revenue itself. So certainly something to look at. And the EPL is doing it a little bit differently in the US than some other leagues. La Liga has a joint venture in North America and in Mexico with Relevant, which is Stephen Ross's soccer events group. And they are essentially aimed at doing a lot more of the things that you're talking about. Yes, La Liga North America negotiated both the new deal with ESPN in the US and a brand new deal with Televisa in Mexico and Central America. But they're also doing, they built a content studio in Guadalajara. They're working on getting regular season La Liga games, both to trying in the US and I would expect maybe trying in Mexico as well. There's a whole commercialization strategy in these new kind of budding marketplaces, industry or media or markets like the US, that is, again, much more than just being able to get the games available on Saturdays and Sundays.
Can I throw something at you that we have not discussed? You'll be totally unprepared for, but I think you've had some fun anyway, right? Can I put you on the spot? Yeah. Okay, I want to have a little larger discussion. We do have other topics, but I find this stuff massively interesting. I really do. Where do you stand? Like Bob Chapek had Disney earnings the other day, and you know the user growth on the streaming side was not what they expected. And I'm not shocked by that, frankly. I mean, it's programming related. Let's see how it goes. But Disney seems to part and parcel. This is the debate going on. They part and parcel networks. There are streaming networks based on content. Like there's Disney Plus, there's ESPN Plus, there's different pieces based on content. Netflix, which is the 800-pound gorilla, they don't do that. There's one platform. It's Netflix. And content of different genres coexists right there. You can have Squid Game right next to kids programming. You just have to go and pick, and I don't think consumers care. So the debate I'm hearing, I'm reading, I'm seeing is, does Disney need to just scrap this plan of separate places, separate streaming services based on content? Can it just be Disney Plus, if they want to go with the parent company, and you put your sports there, and you put your kids programming there, and you put your adult content there, whatever? Can you just have one platform, or do you need to part and parcel it out the way it is?
It's such an interesting question, because so much of what a lot of people, if you go back, let's say go back 5 years, so much what people kind of expected and were excited about the streaming future was kind of the a la carte nature of it in some ways, right? That this idea that for so long, everybody had one big large cable bill that had everything in it. Yeah. And the truth is that not everybody wanted to watch sports, and not everybody wanted the cartoons, and not everybody wanted the movies. So fracturing that apart was the thing that I think a lot of people were excited about as consumers. Now that we're halfway here, partially here, Scott, I think we're realizing, one, that it's not cheaper necessarily to go a la carte. It can be significantly more expensive. But also, in some ways, what you're offering there is essentially a cable bundle for streamed via one platform, right? I think that there is at least some value in breaking those things apart. I am an ESPN Plus subscriber. I am not a Disney Plus subscriber. The Disney Plus part of that does not interest me at all. And as a result, if I can pay less for just the things that I watch, that seems better, at least for me right now. I mean, ESPN does a really good job of offering these things as a bundle, as they're discounted. I'm sure part of what they're doing there is getting a sense of exactly what you're talking about what would happen if we made everything just a bundle. How many people really do just care about one of these platforms, Hulu Plus instead of ESPN Plus, or Disney Plus instead of Hulu Plus, and then trying to figure that out. But yes, it's a good question. And the other thing I would say on this is that there's always been this kind of possibility, rumors about Disney's plans with ESPN, if that involved spinning it out at some point or really separating the companies. There's a chance that keeping ESPN Plus separate from those things is also a way of keeping that door open, if that is a door they want to walk through at some point in the future.
Yeah, I would say Chapek's comments, sort of how important sports is to Disney and how they view it, it would sort of suggest that that won't be the case, but it does pop up every now and then. Yeah, you know me, I'm an old guy. You know, I have the cable bundle. It works for me. I just keep looking at all these new things, whether it's The Morning Show, whether it was Hamilton, and I can't order them all based on these one-off things that I might want to watch once. Yeah, I have to figure out which ones do I want, which ones do I need, is it worth this one program? So I've just decided to, you know, go in my shell, like, you know, totally turtle in my shell and be like, Eben, you tell me what I need to do and watch, because I'm not going out one by one by one and adding all these. I'm interested, and this is just like case study one. As you know, if there's one thing the Soschnick family does tune into, it's NHL hockey, right? Yeah. You know, we're a hockey family, you know that. But interestingly, my kid doesn't watch it all the time. So this is the only thing that has kept me. So they have used ESPN Plus very effectively in this NHL deal to have really good games, exclusive games on Plus to really drive those subs. So far, sorry, Disney folks, so far I have resisted because I have enough in the area. I can watch the Devils, the Rangers, the Islanders almost every night. Then I get the national games on Turner. And I can watch plenty of hockey in my house without signing up. But there are plenty of times where I'm like, ooh, I would kind of like to see Connor McDavid play, you know, whatever tonight. And that would be good. But I haven't done it yet. I just find it interesting how they've utilized that exclusivity to push the Plus and how effective some of these, even one-offs like Hamilton. My wife, she had to see it. She wanted it. She had to see it. She signed up, but little, I think she canceled. I think she pulled one of those. So, you know, I'm just not sure where these leagues are with the streaming. Is it get me the most money? Is it we have to plan for the future? Is the future a little further along than we thought it would be right now? So dip our toe in the water of streaming. Does it have to be Peacock? Can it be Plus? Which is advantageous to us? These are all the things that we're finding out in real time and I find fascinating.
Part of this discussion that I've kind of always wondered about and I think is something that people in the industry do also is about password sharing.
Yeah,
there's so much of exactly the thing that you're talking about right now that people are getting around because they have a cousin, they have a parent, they have a child, they have a friend that is willing to lend them passwords. And a lot of the things that I watch, Scott, I'm watching on accounts that are not mine. And as a result, a lot of my friends are using accounts that are mine because we have a tit for tat for X and Y. And that is something that's been going on for, I mean, Netflix for so long made part of its calling card this fact that you could have essentially unlimited accounts. And to my knowledge, they haven't reined them in all that much. I am keep waiting for the moment at which kind of the entire streaming industry decides that, yeah, that's not enough anymore. And then I think you get a really good sense of what people are watching that is required, that they have to have, that they're willing to pay for monthly or yearly, et cetera. But right now we're still kind of in this middle ground where if you need to watch the morning show, you can find someone in your ecosystem that has Apple Plus that will let you log in for 2 or 3 weeks to watch it and then let that be it. We're still kind of in this weird stage where the economics, I think, fully haven't meshed out because there's so much free available right now.
All right. We had lots to talk about, but since you and I rambled on so long about that, and that's my fault, I'll take the hit on that one. And since you just, by the way, put your hand up and said theft of service guy right there, that's Evan Novi Williams at Team USA, new deal with Nike, victory over Mexico, inching toward that World Cup berth, all good things for Team USA soccer.
Yeah, a lot of momentum right now. As you mentioned, the Nike deal is the largest commercial partnership in USA soccer history. They are currently negotiating new CBAs with both the men's team and most importantly, given current lawsuits, the women's team as well. As we've talked about you know, a number of sports, getting a long-term labor accord is pretty critical for leagues and federations of all sorts. But if they can clear that hurdle, the men's team looks like it is potentially the best U.S. team that we've ever had. It's very young. The women's team, obviously dominant. We have a men's World Cup in the U.S. in 2026. We have a Summer Olympics in the U.S. in 2028. We have a pretty good shot, I think, at hosting a Women's World Cup in 2031. We're really looking at a potentially pretty massive 10-year run here for soccer in the U.S. And going back to the original topic, so many of the people that are investing in MLS right now, and I would imagine Blitz is one of them, are looking at the fact that back in 1994, when the U.S. hosted the last Men's World Cup here, it was a massive moment for soccer in the U.S. It's the reason Major League Soccer exists right now. There are a lot of people out there that believe that Men's World Cup, Summer Olympics, potential Women's World Cup kind of stacked up in that 5 or 6 year stretch is really going to do wonders commercially for the sport here in the U.S.
All right. And now let's switch to the NFL to close this out. What are the two most feared words at NFL headquarters? I'll give you
discovery two. And concussions.
Oh, I was going to go right. Well, discovery was the first one and deposition. Okay. Discovery and deposition. Yeah. Those are the two most feared words at NFL headquarters. Fair. And of course, John Gruden has now filed suit against the NFL based on his firing. Of course, it's going to be really interesting one day to look back and see who it was that leaked those emails. You know, it was clearly John Gruden was targeted in this for whatever reason. I'm not sure the person who did it really understood the wide-ranging ramifications of what would soon follow. But here we are, and you have to know that the NFL certainly, as has been its history, does not want to have its executives sitting, submitting emails, submitting to discovery, and having any dirty laundry aired publicly.
Yeah, and just to kind of provide context around the news, Gruden has sued the NFL. What he says is quoting here, malicious and orchestrated campaign to destroy his career. The league and Goodell are named as defendants.
And by the way, they say it wasn't us. The NFL, for the record, says we didn't do it.
And I don't know, Michael McCann would need to weigh in on how legitimate this lawsuit is and how likely it is to move forward. But, as we kind of joke there about deposition and discovery, the league has made it very clear. It does not want to go to discovery on a lot of lawsuits. There is a potentially more near-term kind of a problem for the NFL and what's going on in St. Louis. You and I have talked about that before, but that is a lawsuit that's going to be in court in January, unless there is a settlement, from what I understand. And from what everything I've heard, the league does not want to hit discovery in that either. It's going to be fascinating to see this play out, primarily because in some ways just getting this thing to the discovery phase is the thing that is so worrisome to the NFL, not necessarily if it went to court, would they win it or not. It's trying to avoid getting a lot of things coming out in court in the process that might be damaging to the league.
Boy, if this, the Robert Sarver, if I'm an NFL owner, executive, if I am an owner, executive in any sport, are you not taking a proactive investigation right now? Like, is every team in every sport hiring sort of independent investigator? Be like, all right, put us through the car wash. All of our executives, our ownership, if there's anything there, we need to get out ahead of it.
If that's true, my question would be, what took them so long?
Yeah, this is not
you
new,
could,
right?
I could argue that should have been an imperative for owners years ago. Once they realized kind of how pervasive in this culture a lot of these problems were, that they should have been taking those proactive steps a long time ago. And I think we're kind of starting to see it already. I can't remember which team, but I believe there have been a few executives in the NBA that have been, mm-hmm. there have been some new investigations popping up around them. I think we're kind of seeing the seeds of a lot of that kind of internal looking right now. But yeah, if you are a team owner and you're just now saying, hey, let's make sure that everything's been okay here for the past couple of decades, you're behind the eight ball for sure.
Yeah, you're talking about Neil Olshey, and the Portland Trailblazers is one of them. All right, he is Eben Novi Williams on the Twitter at Novi_Williams. I am Scott Soschnick on Twitter at Soschnick. The show, as Cora Veltman, our social media editor, would love for me to remind you, is at Sporticast, which is the hub of what will very soon become the Sportico Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.